All right, hello, fellow travelers. Thank you for joining me once again on the Unbroken Ground. Tonight's a special episode. I'm here with my friend Jim. Jim has appeared in other episodes, and we've done kind of a different format. But tonight, I am trying something new because, like Jim, I get bored of doing things. And so this is my new format, at least for tonight. And I'm just going to ask Jim a question. And I'm going to let him answer, and then I might have some follow-up questions to that. So, Jim, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me back.
That's not the question, but it is
that
a question.
That was a question.
That was a question.
That was a question.
All right, I can't talk anymore.
Yep. Now we got to get on to would you rather.
Would you rather. here we go, Jim. Here's the question.
Okay.
So, what is a specific event or decision that has defined you? How do you work to be different? Or what do you do to contribute to that process and definition? So in other words, what makes you you? What in your past makes you you? And are you pursuing that you, or are you trying, like, do you think that you're like to be different from you? So what do you got? What do you think?
It's such a big question.
Yes.
That's a terrible question just to spring on somebody. By the way.
I texted to you at least 4 hours ago.
I understand. So I appreciate the being able to think through it. But I'm just saying, I'm giving anybody that's listening, if you want to throw that question out to somebody, give them a while to answer. Because there's a lot of things that make me me. I mean, that's the complexity of being a person, right? And regardless of whether we want to admit to change or not, we're always changing and developing. And as I think back, I mean, we all have those moments that we would say define who I was. So, I mean, just my kids being born defines me as a father. Pretty significant moments. And so with kids, it gets a little more complex because you have a lot of individual moments in there that help you understand who you are as a father. And each kid gives you different moments and different angles of how you see that and how you react. So there's a few defining moments. I mean, I'm just kind of moving backwards in my timeline. So, like, there's a few defining moments there. And then if I go pre-kids, then your marriage for me, marriage, that defines a commitment for the rest of my life. So that defines who I am. Going further back, that's, because we're going backwards in the timeline, we're kind of going to like baptism, that defines who I am. That's a public statement of pursuing Christ. That happens, well, in the church tradition I grew up in and kind of embraced at early mid-20s of my life, that it wasn't come to Christ to be baptized. It was come to Christ and then later be baptized. And when you understand, then be baptized. So so that's why it's separated. And then, I don't know, that whole decision to follow Christ, that's an interesting one for me. I guess that's maybe the first, I would define it as the first defining decision for me. Because I can remember being a kid.
So what, give us the details then.
All right.
Let's start there. What are the details of, like, when you accepted Christ?
I'll give you, so it's an interesting, and I think that one's more interesting, actually, probably the most interesting, because I remember being on the couch with my mom at whatever, the age of 5 or 6, and we were at a Halloween, or we had a Halloween party at my house, and so I remember being on our couch with my mom, away from the party a little bit, and I told mom I want Jesus to be at my party. And so she had a conversation. I mean, we had a conversation, and I remember asking Jesus to be in my heart then. So I remember that moment, But my whole my whole family, not just immediate family, but both extended families grew up in the church. And so, like, it didn't really change anything. We still always went to church. Went to church on Sunday morning and then back for Sunday night and then Wednesdays for Awana and whatever Bible studies throughout the week or something. And so, and then I grew up in the school that was connected to my church. So I was there Monday through Friday when I was going to school. And so, that's very defining. Those are all very defining moments as far as I can see what Christ was doing, establishing kind of the footings of what I would stand on later. Because I go to a public high school, so I get to high school and just go to a public high school because that's when the school that I went to, they only went to the eighth grade, so jumped from a graduating class of eight in my whatever Christian school into my freshman class of 450 some kids. And so lots of different worldviews, public school.
And knowing your story a little bit, yeah. I don't even know if I know all of it, so I will say that.
Sure.
But knowing your story a little bit, so from the 5-year-old gym to we're getting ready for high school gym.
Yeah.
So you kind of described it as kind of the underpinnings or kind of the foundations there. What kind of meaning or what kind of relationship did you have with Jesus or to the idea of what it meant to? Because, I mean, we all, anybody who accepted Christ when they were a kid, we all accepted it to the ability that we understood that at the time. But right. But 5-year-old Jim obviously understands things much differently than any year later Jim. So what kind of, like, what was the evolution of that kind of relationship as you went through kind of some of your stages of junior high and then you know, leading into high school?
Yeah.
Because you were at a Christian school during your elementary or junior high years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I think maturity is what I bring up there. I don't know if anything really changed. I don't know if anything really changed because I think I just lived the culture that I was in. And so, because our lives revolved so heavily around whatever the church did, I don't know if, and so this is where it gets confusing. I don't know if I would even say I had a relationship with Jesus.
Sure. But you had a relationship with the concept of Christianity.
I was 100% culturally a Christian.
Yeah.
I was all in, and I knew things were wrong, and I knew that I wasn't right. And so those things I understood. I guess that would be other defining moments is what I see. So when we're talking about defining moments, we're talking about things that make me, right?
Yeah.
As an individual.
Right, right.
And so I think one of the things that I noticed in that phase of life, reflecting back, I guess I should say, on that phase of life, is I noticed that when my friends and I got in trouble, we would get in trouble differently. Hmm. And by that I mean some of my friends were able to maybe talk their way into some less reduced sentence or consequence or whatever, where I just accepted. Like, I was just like, you got me. And I think that is very different. That is one of the aspects that makes me me. Because I just started noticing that. of like all of my like I have friends that are just really good at talking themselves out of things, and I get caught and I'm just like, yep, you caught me, and then I have to deal with whatever that is. And so I think that's defining. I mean, I can point to in little vivid moments that I have, memories that I have. They're not very interesting to talk about, but I mean, like that's...
Sure.
You know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think those are defining moments that happened in that period of my life. But culturally, if we're talking about a relationship with Jesus...
Yeah.
I knew... those were the right words. I had no idea what that meant. And I think everybody has to go through that.
Sure.
Because once I got to high school and I saw other people live in different directions, that's definitely something I pursued. Like, a defining moment, I guess, in that phase would probably be the beginning of a defining moment would be me telling God, if you're real, leave me alone for a year. I don't care. Because I'm just going to live my life. And he did. I don't know if it was exactly or to the day. I don't really care. But it was close enough. I mean, I lived my life for fun for whatever that period was, and then started a relationship with my wife, well, my wife now, and then through that relationship, that was the other defining moment. Is now he's defining love for me and what that means, and friendship, because living for fun, you have a different connection to people than when you really care, when you genuinely want to do life with someone.
So that's an interesting phrase that you said to God, leave me alone for a year. Like, what does that mean? Like, how did that play out in your life to you? Like, you said, okay, yeah, he did. He surely left me alone for, maybe not for 365 and a half quarter day exactly, but what did that, how did you say that with like some, authority that he did leave me, like he left me or let me go, in the kind of sense. What does that mean?
I 100% ran from everything Christian. I pursued, if you put live for fun as, like, if you just put on that hat, that's what I pursued. And he allowed me to do that. And so looking back, I mean, I would say he was probably the closest to me and protecting me through a lot of really dumb decisions that I was doing. My theology doesn't allow me to say that he actually left me alone.
Sure.
But he stayed out of my head. You know, like it wasn't that he allowed me to actually grab on fully to, let's just do the funnest thing possible every moment of every day from this point on. And
so do you feel like your heart was, so at this point, because you kind of had, you talked about as a child, you had this very strong sense of right and wrong. So even at this point, would you say that you were able to like even just release guilt away, and just, it was just, oh no, I'm just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to experience these things and I'm not even really having to think.
I would 100% say that was the switch that went off in my head of, because I had a new focus, because I was able to say in my brain, all right, this Jesus stuff cannot be real, because all of these other people are living this other direction and they're having they're having way better time than I am. Making friends with kids that came to school high and all that stuff. And so that drew me in. And so, and I think I need, I mean, and now we're getting to another defining aspect. As we mature, we're going from, let's see, so as we mature, we're going from defining moments that kind of define where, how we grew up and kind of the cultural us, which would be my pre-high school years. But as we mature, I think we start seeing the deeper things in our lives of like, okay, so what characteristics are me? Like, what's me? What makes me me? That's the high school years, right? And so I started seeing, I mean, in high school, it was definitely 100%. Well, Jesus is either everything or it's nothing. And so I really want, if it's nothing, then there's a whole bunch of life I'm missing out.
Right.
And so I was able to switch over my brain to that side, that way of thinking of, that's just small-mindedness and that's just silliness. And I mean, that whole Christian thing, that's just a viewpoint. There could be many different ways to get to God. I don't even think I really wanted to think about God, because I think because of my foundation, anytime I thought about God, it would be the Christian God. And so it was just really I'm going full for fun. I don't want to think about theology. I don't want to think about long-term outcomes. I don't want to think about whatever all that stuff is. I want to enjoy life to the full. And all very important things, because I don't, without that rebellious phase in my life, I don't think I would have been able to look back at that portion of my life and understand that the rebellious spirit in me and the addictive personality that I have and those would be the two main aspects of that period of my life that God was saying things like, or that would define my life as, no, these are actually a part of you and I'm going to use them. Because I think after I got married, after I came back to Christ, got married, I think God was able to show me the benefit of having the benefit of having a rebellious spirit is definitely creativity. Because if you're able to maturely rein that rebellion in and understand what rules are breakable and what rules aren't, you're actually allowing it allowed myself to start thinking more creatively. Like, and I just enjoy that part of my head of like, just like, I don't know, that's getting into my head a little bit, but boring sermon can be boring. I don't mind, because my brain will just start going places, and that's fine. And that, I don't know. I guess I'd point to that as a simple example of that's me breaking the rules, because I'm in a sermon. I should be listening. But I can also get into that story in different ways and break those rules of how you're supposed to listen to a sermon, I guess. I don't know, that breaks down really fast, but that's because people are complex, I guess. But he used, I mean, all that to say, that high school phase, that rebellious phase between in high school and meeting my wife and getting married, like, all of that rebellion and having an addictive personality, and that mentality of, well, Jesus is either everything or nothing, it defined how I found a job, it defined how I went to school, it defined a lot of things. Because once I realized, well, okay, I could either live for fun, and I started, and God showed me the end of that, I mean, where that road would lead, I mean, He mercifully stepped back into my life and was like, this is where you're going. I mean, if you want to live here, this is where you're going. And so, yeah, and so if life's not all about just trying to conquer the world and have fun, then Christ is the answer. And so that guided my vocation. I mean, that, yeah. I tried working at a normal job and it just wasn't fulfilling. I mean, like, you know, like there's just those are all defining moments in there. Yeah.
So tease out a little bit more, because you said it a couple of times, and I was like, if Christ isn't either Christ is either everything or He's nothing. Like, what are what are the implications? What does that mean for life? He's everything. What's the realization that you came to in that, of what that means and how that really just kind of settled into your brain and heart?
Well, I'm still learning that. Because when I...
Share the things you have learned so far.
Oh, fine. The reason I start with I'm still learning that is because when I say Jesus is everything, the longer I pursue Him, the more I understand how much I'm pulling back from Him. And so I think once you understand that there is only true fulfillment and life abundant once you get rid of all of that sin that you have and all of that messy stuff that we have, that's how we get true abundant life. And I think a lot of worldviews do a lot of gymnastics to try and get rid of that sin and that guilt and that whatever, and give you hope for some kind of weird future. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I mean, blame it on my foundation. I mean, blame it on the family I grew up in, but Jesus really is the only thing that really makes sense to me. Because we're going back to that whole idea that, okay, so if I have to work, how much do I have to work? Nobody knows. Well, that's fun. Like, that seems like a relentless pursuit of good for selfish gain. Like, I don't really understand that aspect of that. And in my life, I don't want my kids to follow my rules or listen to me because they fear wrath. It's way better to get them to listen to me and understand, and without even saying anything, watch them do the right thing. Like, that's way more fulfilling than knowing that they're trying to get points with me. Like, everybody can tell when somebody's trying to get points. I mean, in your friendships, in any kind of relationship, you can tell the people that are trying to whatever, get points, versus the people that genuinely care. And I don't know. I just, and so all of those, like, and to me, from Buddhists to, I guess I had, didn't really look into too many other, I mean.
Sure.
Not deeply. I mean, because I wasn't into religion. Like,
right.
You were moving away from religion,
and so you weren't really moving to another religion, because the point was not,
right,
I want to be more religious. The point was,
I wasn't trying to pursue God. I was trying to pursue fun. And so, yeah.
It sounds a little bit, if I'll say this, and you can tell me how, whether I'm on point or off base. I give you that freedom here. It sounds a little bit about a little Garden of Eden kind of situation too, because the question that the snake really brings to Eve is everything they have enough? Because he says, "Oh, can you eat from every tree?"
Mm.
"Oh, I can eat from every tree. Well, except for." Mm. For this one. And then the snake says, "Oh, well, you know, if you ate from this one, you would be just like God. I mean, you would have it all. Like, you're actually missing out."
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds a little bit of an exploration of that sense to me, that is that idea of like, okay, I've lived Christianity, the culture, the whole thing. I've been in the whole nine yards. I've been in that for this portion of my life. I want to see, am I missing out on something? Mm. Like, it was almost like I need to see for myself. A little prodigal son to, like, let me take my inheritance, go live in the wild lands and come back. But that idea of the sufficiency of God, which is kind of the original question, is if Christ is everything, is that enough? Mm. And when you surrender to that, then it doesn't matter that there's other things. Mm. And you live in such a way, not necessarily to earn points or to, you know, earn salvation or be on the good side of God, but because this is the way to live. Mm. And I think, like, with your kids, you want them to live right, not because you want them to live right, but because they want to live right, and they've come to the understanding of what it means to live right. Because you know, you can't live for anybody else. You can only live for yourself. In the sense of deciding on what to do. But again, everything is Christ. You live for Him. But like, the motivation can't be somebody else going, "Oh, I think you should be more like Jesus." I mean, it's helpful sometimes to have that, but it's got to come from you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it seems like. You spent a year or so. Well,
I would.
Defining that or working through some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I would respond with it, a little bit of, you have to have that understanding that my heart is never going to guide me in the right direction. And so, step one, once I understand, okay, it's either Christ or nothing, and if I start moving towards Christ, that means everything in my heart needs to get passed through His thoughts first. And so, because my heart really just wants to live for fun all the time, like, all I want, I just want, I am still a 5-year-old kid that cannot think of any kind of long-term consequences. Like, I just want what's in front of me.
Hmm.
You can have 10 cents now or a dollar later. 10 cents now, please. Yeah, but a dollar later. No, 10 cents now, please. Like that's my heart. That's where I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm.
But if I pass that through Christ, then I get to, I mean, as I mature, then you get to see the value of, I don't know, the brain that He gives us to think through those things. And the being responsible with all of the gifts that he's given you in various different ways. And so, yeah, I think it was very much Garden of Eden. I mean, very much grass is greener somewhere else. It was very much hashtag fear of missing out. You know, like,
yeah,
that's 100% what it was. And I think we all have to work through that a little bit, because like you said, like, it has to be you as an individual. You can't meet Christ in a crowd. You can go to a sermon and you can get caught up. Even, I mean, go to any Pentecostal church and, man, you'll get caught up. But you can't meet Christ there. You can have an experience with him, but you can't meet him there. I think we always meet Christ on an individual level.
Yeah.
And so, even amidst a crowd, when you're meeting Christ, that crowd fades and you become very introspective, and it's very much a pressing of your heart. It's a very much a wrestling of what's me and what's Christ right now, and it's very much a push and pull, and you feel the weight of that sin, but you also feel the warmth of grace and mercy and love. And so I think that stuff you can experience in a crowd, but I don't think we really meet Jesus in a crowd. And so I think, and so I think that's what Jesus was doing. I mean, I'd argue that's what he's doing with all of us throughout our lives. But sometimes we just miss it.
All right, last question.
Okay.
I'll give you a moment to think about it, because I'm going to formulate it in my brain and speak it out loud, and hopefully it makes sense.
All right.
So now Jim, who you are now.
Okay, now Jim.
Now Jim gets the opportunity to go back to Jim at any point in the past.
Okay.
Any point. Last yesterday, if you choose.
Okay.
All the way down to 3-year-old or 5-year-old. I don't know. I don't remember my super baby years, so I probably wouldn't recommend those. But you get to go back and you get to spend an hour with a past Jim. And so we don't break time laws and stuff like this.
What?
It's a question. That's always the time travel thing. Like, if you go back and change, you're not changing. It's not necessarily going to change your life necessarily. But
okay.
Imagine if you could. I just don't want to create any time paradoxes. Not that I have an actual time machine here.
Not that smart, nor do I care. So whatever.
Now Jim can go speak to any Jim at any age.
Okay.
What age do you want to go back to, and what do you want to say? So take a moment, think about that. While you do that, I'm going to tell people that, hey, this is The Unbroken Ground. Again, thank you for joining us. If you have comments or questions or suggestions or any of those type of things, you can email us at theunbrokenground@gmail.com. You can find us at the Facebook /theunbrokenground or on Instagram, Unbroken Ground, and also on Threads, although I'm not very active on there, so good luck. So we'd love to hear from you. This is one of those special episodes that doesn't count towards the 52 total I'm doing, but it is one that I enjoy very much. So there's my plug, and one day I'll have merchandise that I can plug as well, but I don't. Drink water, special on broken groundwater coming soon. It'll have it'll have electrolytes or something.
What?
I don't know. Some essential oils.
Alright.
or something. I don't know. It's not a thing. Alright, so there you go. I have given you
soon ample, to be on what social we were just talking about? Soon to be on
Be seen. Yeah. Maybe. We'll see.
All right. Well, we can't even get the name right, so.
It was a challenge between me and a junior in high school now? Sophomore. She was like,
is that Hannah?
If you'll do it, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah.
So, possibly.
That's always the best reason to do something.
Possibly, I might be. Possibly might be seeing you on Be Seen. Nice. All right. I've ran enough. Pause time. You've definitely had enough time to come up with what age you want to go back to, and surely you know what you'd want to say to that age of Jim. Go.
I mean, in all serious, I would actually go back to 2020 Jim. Because that was such a retirement year, and I'm still recovering from some of the selfishness that I let loose that year. And I don't really understand why it's taking me so long to do that. But, for whatever reason, Jesus keeps unveiling how deep that selfishness went that I just unveiled. I mean,
you can get into that too, but don't forget, what message, like specifically, so what's a specific message that you would say? So you can do the unveiling. I don't want to take you from getting digging into that, but I do want you to get to a point where you say this is the specific message.
That yeah. So I mean, that's what I was. I guess I was getting to the idea that I would 100% tell 2020 Jim to intentionally be around the family. And intentionally dive in, even though I might not have agreed with a lot of what was happening in the church, just dive in. Because the issues that I'm uncovering are so deep that it just takes those kind of friendships to have those conversations to. And I don't know a solution. I don't know if that's the right. I mean, God is. It's happening the way it's happening for reasons. So, but that's what I'm struggling through. So that's what I would lighten up on me, because that's what we do with struggles, right? Try and lighten them up. So, but at the same time, I don't know. And the reason I say that is because I don't know if. I mean, I look at the rebellious years, and yeah, there were a lot of really stupid things that I did there, and probably worth an hour of my time to go back to that gym and explain to him.
But you only get one gym. That's the laws of the time travel.
Right.
Only one gym.
I know. But people have asked me what my parents have done wrong, or what did I do wrong in that phase of my life, and I don't think it was anything. I think for God to be able to define who I am and allow me to see who He created me to be and the differences between the things in my heart that I need to change and the things that in my heart that are part of who make me me, I needed to go through that stuff as an individual. And so There's a part of me that says that's why I chose 2020, Jim, because that's the most recent, biggest change. But God's doing something.
Yeah.
You know, like, at least He's getting deeper.